Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Bert Weisbord, and I'm here to talk with Mary Ann Maloney about my novel, Inside Passage, and specifically about the process of bringing a novel to the screen as a motion picture or on television. I've produced feature films, including Ghost Stories starring Fred Astaire and Raggedy Man starring Sissy Spacek. Mary Ann is uniquely qualified to talk about adapting books to film and TV. She began her career at Viking Penguin, where she sold the film rights to ordinary people. She went on to be a literary agent representing writers and directors, then moved to Universal Studios as vice president of production, supervising the development and production of theatrical features. At Universal, her projects included Ghost Story and Raggedy Man, so we've had a long professional collaboration. Since then, Marian has produced numerous feature films and television movies. Many of her projects have been adaptations, including A Soldier's Sweetheart, which is adapted from a Tim O'Brien story, and Out of the Ashes, adapted from Dr. Gisela Pearl's book. She is currently adapting Providence from Jeffrey Wolfe's celebrated novel and many others. Let's begin with a question for Marian. What did you think of the characters in Inside Passage?
Good morning, Bert.
Good morning.
As you alluded, we had an interesting professional collaboration, which did not include you being a novelist. So I was very intrigued when you told me you had written the book, and I was actually bedazzled by the characters, Corey and Abe, the leading protagonists, and also the supporting characters.
Let's talk about Corey and Abe. What is it that interested you about them?
Well, they're an unlikely pair in terms of their association and in terms of the evolution of a romantic relationship. I think when we meet Corey and she's faced with re-entering the world from a prison stay and trying to secure her son back, Abe can be a very important friend or foe in achieving that for her. So I was prepared for it to be antagonistic. I was prepared for it to be therapeutic. I really wasn't prepared for the serious investment I made in each of them very early.
Did he feel that it was believable that the two of them would be together?
I thought it was extremely believable based on circumstance, because she's looking to be evaluated to secure custody of her son. I was really intrigued by the particulars of each of them. She being street smart, almost wily, he being a guy who's inside a lot of other people's heads, but maybe not so able on his own to master the world. She's much more a master of the universe in terms of the concrete world. So it kind of triggered for me a sense that they would not be as comfortable at first. And in fact, they weren't. But it grows into something deep, interesting, and honest.
Well, that's great that that works, because I think that's really at the heart of the book.
It's unexpected,
book about,
which is true in all the relationships in the book.
Well, that's what I was going to say. This is a book that's really about, in some ways, things not being what they seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that context, I mean, you have Nick and Jesse that look like, on the surface, a perfect couple, whereas Abe and Corey are just so unlikely. Let's talk for a minute about Nick and Jesse. Does that work for you?
Well, what works for me between them is they are kindred spirits, and they're insiders in all the ways that we evaluate that in the world. In their case, it happens to be in the world of politics. Abe and Corey are outsiders. And that contrast and that conflict, which is something that really is a very strong resource in the book, was appealing to me.
Well, and for those of you who haven't read the book, it should be said that Jesse is Abe's mother. And that, I think, adds
not insignificant.
And so, in fact, the book has three interwoven love stories, Abe and Corey, Nick and Jesse. And Nick is not a good guy, although he appears to be at first. And then Corey's son, Billy's relationship with Morgan. And this is a story of first love, whereas Nick and Jesse is really a very jaded relationship. You want to talk for a minute about Billy and Morgan?
Well, Billy is Corey's son. He's 15 years old, but he's a man of the world. He's had to fend for himself for the 2 years or so that she's been away, imprisoned. My recollection is he was able to make one visit to her and then was put in foster care. And when we meet him now in the book, he's somewhere between juvenile detention and foster care, with a mom he's not certain of, waiting to secure him back with Abe's help. That's a story for a book on its own. So it's a very, very rich thread in this story.
Does the book feel too tightly wound in this way, that there are all these interwoven relationships, or do you feel like they sort of, there's like a geometric progression of...
Well, there's a great deal of substance, but what I think is so deft in the writing is that it feels totally organic when you're reading it, how Corey comes to Abe, how through Abe we meet Jesse, we identify who Nick is, and it's really about the interlocking destinies of all those people.
Well, there's a reason I've been asking about the characters, because this now brings up the question of, is the novel a good project for film or television, and if so, why? And I think the characters are key to that. Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. The characters and their story, I mean, I think just on Sunday night when they did a bit of an homage on the Academy Awards, Dick Zanuck, the comment that he made that was left with us at the end of that kind of moving tribute was that it isn't so much the script, it's the story. And that's always true, I think, the power of the story. And their story, separate and together, geometrically creates an investment in the reader. I think that's really important for transferring the story from the page to a screen. And for me, the characters, in a world where now movies have become largely spectacles, Silver Linings Playbook is a movie that's about the interplay, the personal. In a world where many, many movies are much more technical in their preparation and in their reception, this is intimate, it's powerful, and I think they're memorable characters, and for that reason, I think its potential is vast.
Well, let's talk about the pros and cons of adapting Inside Passage as a film versus for television. And I'd also like you to speak specifically to what the options are in television drama today, because that's something that's changed since I produced movies.
Yes, television is an evolving medium. What I would say is the difference between a movie and television drama, if you're making a film, you're obviously in a roughly two-hour time frame, and I think this certainly can be a powerful movie. The challenge for a dramatist, a screenwriter, is to take that story and select the storylines and moments in this novel that depict exactly what the heart of the matter is. In something like a television drama, The Good Wife, for example, which is a quite popular drama on CBS, a broadcast network, one is allowed each week to be intimately involved with many characters and many different challenges they may face. You can do something with much more intimacy and depth if you have those many more hours. But it's doable in both avenues, I think.
What would be, let me see how to put this, the advantages of doing it as a feature film? Would it be seen by more people? Would it be a bigger event? Would it be a more expensive and elaborate?
Not necessarily does the answer lie in numerical. I think in times past, television drama was a little less bold and more constrained in terms of sexual and violent elements that could be portrayed. With the advent of cable television and cable television series, which are by and large extremely earthy and edgy, if you look at what HBO programs or Showtime or AMC with something like Mad Men, there are subject matters that probably even 10 years ago would not found their way onto broadcast television. In this story, I think the political, the sexual, the violence are all things that need to be woven in an alchemy that tells the story truthfully, authentically, an overused word, but it's really important in terms of character investment for an audience.
Well, one of the things that I know just from watching HBO, for example, is that you do have a lot more, you have the opportunity to really go in great depth over a long and great complexity over a long period of time with a variety of characters. And that's something that wasn't true when I was producing movies. In that two-hour time frame of a movie, you really couldn't go as far as you're able to go in some of the TV dramas that I've seen. So that's very appealing to me. I'd like to, Inside Passage is the first in the Corey Logan trilogy. So not only is there the opportunity to go deeper with these characters in this story, but there's more story, so that it could really go on for quite a long time. And that's certainly...
Well, one of the things beyond the three couples we spoke about, who we identify as different kinds of love stories in what is essentially, for me, a novel that is a thriller. And I think that visceral quality to the writing and the level of danger and suspense for reading the book is fantastic. And that will play beautifully on any screen, big or small.
Well, that's the other side. That's one of the other thing that's tempting. I know from my time as a producer that these are the kind of characters that could really get a feature film, become an exciting feature film.
Mm-hmm.
Just very focused and a big event. And that's very appealing to me, too. And that's actually a question that I have for you as someone more expert in this, what are the pros and cons of doing this as a standalone project as opposed to doing the entire trilogy?
Are you asking me that in artistic terms?
Both.
Both.
Yeah, in artistic terms.
Well, artistically, I think that... as we know, there are movies 1 through 5, you know, numerically for sequel movies. And so if you have sequel stories, these characters can return to the big screen as well as weekly in your home. It's the power of the story that really drives that decision. And, of course, the business opportunity that might present itself. For me, I think telling the story truthfully with as much nuance and complexity is always where the answer to that question lies.
And I think that, well, let's put this in context, because before we go further with this, or before I speak to the specifics of that, and incidentally, I agree with what you just said, but I think that there are shades of gray here. I mean, there's ways that doing three feature films would allow for really interesting complexity if it were possible to get three feature films made. The television drama obviously allows one to deal with the nuance and complexity in a way that certainly wasn't true in television when I was producing movies. But let's put it in a historical context.
I can give you an interesting historical marker with respect to the Judith Guest novel, Ordinary People. Because
that would be great.
I was privileged when I worked for Viking to sell the motion picture rights to that novel early on. And interestingly enough, Viking was supporting that book in a very big way and doing lots of pre-publishing promotion and advertising. And there was fantastic word of mouth in the New York publishing business, which really meant something. And I was reasonably confident we could do a very good job of selling the movie rights for Judith Guest, who wrote the novel, her first novel, by the way. I was chagrined to learn that most people, when they read the book, though they found it powerful, thought it's about a teenager, albeit a teenager who actually had contemplated and attempted suicide, a rather dramatic story, clearly. But because it was a teenager way back then, lots of the so-called traditional movie people and even television people decided that that made it a small movie, that the intimacy of the story made it a small movie. And they weren't particularly interested. And of the two firm offers that we received, one of them was from a person of high profile who was not yet what but would become the motion pictures director, which was Robert Redford. And interestingly enough, it took probably 3 years to get that picture on the screen with the help of Alvin Sargent, a writer I know you've worked with in screenplays. And imagine the surprise of most people who said it's too small on Oscar night. I believe it garnered 8 awards that year, including Best Picture and Best Director. So it's not predictable. That little story about that teenage boy and his challenges became the biggest movie of that year.
What do you think would happen with Ordinary People today?
I think it would have an extremely difficult go in the broad marketplace. And I, as an apostle for a story like that, as a producer, would try to find the company, the financier, who understood the power of that story and fell in love with those characters, with all their flaws, to roll the dice with and get that story told. And I would imagine it would have an extremely difficult time now, perhaps even harder than then, because many, many movies are about the visual spectacle and not about the ordinary, everyday, concrete world in which we all struggle.
Well, visual spectacle has become, I mean, in part just because of the new technology, very much a part of television drama as well as feature films. And I think it's one of the strengths of Inside Passage, this whole visual, think about the Inside Passage, the wilderness.
It creates a magical world. And what's fantastic about working in the Dream Factory, which is what the movie and television business really is that you can create illusions in a way that is cost-effective that we could only have dreamed about, let's say, 10 years ago even.
I mean, when we made Ghost Story, you remember how difficult it was just to deal with the weather issues and
exactly.
Snow. And
let alone ghosts and her apparitions.
But I'm imagining that, again, you're more up to date on this than I am, but with all the new technology, all of the things in the inside passage wouldn't require taking, you know, a crew of 100 up the inside passage.
Right. We would have the Northern Lights, but at our command.
Right.
And we would not be hit by a meteor.
When you think about Inside Passage, and let's talk about it for a second as a movie, because as a movie you have a finite amount of time. And what are the elements in the story that you would highlight? Because you can't do it all.
Well, I think what's particularly appealing to me about the way the book is written, the skill with which the book is written, is that you manage to weave many, many characters and many facets of those characters together in a very entertaining and compelling way. And that can translate to a movie. That will include Corey, Abe, Billy, who is Corey's son, Morgan, who is Billy's girl, Nick, who is actually the antagonist in the story, and Jesse, who is, I guess I would say, Nick's woman, but also Abe's mother. And that linkage has a certain compression for a two-hour drama that's really good. The other thing is that the support characters are equally fantastic and not obtrusive.
We're and talking now about like Lester and Riley.
Yes, Lester, who's Nick's guy. I particularly love the introduction of Max, who happens to be another patient in Abe's psychiatric practice, who I knew when I met him at first in the book that he would return. I just couldn't quite imagine how gleefully well he returned.
Well, you know, you're really touching on something that is a real pro in a feature film. I mean, in the finite length. What works, I think, is how this book is so tightly wound, and so how everything sort of takes you by surprise and seems like, well, that couldn't be happening, but in fact it becomes quite believable, whether it's Abe's relationship with Corey or the fact that Jesse is Abe's mom and the person that is the antagonist.
It doesn't get much more complicated than that.
And I think you could do all that in a feature film, whereas it would lose its punch if it was 1 hour and you're sort of left hanging.
Well, not necessarily. I think it's a different choreography. It's a different orchestration. I mean, I think it's very doable. You would have more visits with lesser characters, but the pace of the story might be changed.
Let's talk about that, because, again, you know, you have the luxury of spending more time with, like, Lester or Riley, and also more time from their point of view. At the same time, you would have to draw the story out over a longer period of time.
Yes, but it doesn't really mean that it becomes slower. It may mean that it's deeper, richer. I mean, if you, and that's how really successful television series kind of mushroom in a very good way.
I'm interested in this. I mean, this is new to me, and what you're saying makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
tell me a little bit more.
It's just there's
about
a that. Well, I use the phrase choreography or orchestration because I think writing for the 1 hour television drama or writing for the motion picture screen, which is essentially a 2 or 2.5 hour opportunity, requires different language and different choices. And
it's almost as if the grammar were different.
It is. It's a different language. But let's remember one thing common to both of them, which is the words motion and picture. In your kind introduction, you mentioned Tim O'Brien and a film I made called The Soldier's Sweetheart from his story, Sweetheart of the Song Trabong. One of the brilliant things in his story that was so fantastic for the movie was that he would write a phrase that was maybe 8 words long, and you could literally write 4 movie scenes that would occupy 10 minutes of the film. Example, the girl loved the jungle. What does that mean? And okay, and then in the film you do a sequence that shows the allure, the orchids, and she ends up in a cave, maybe finding a dead soldier's ear in a banana leaf. And you think, how is that possible? That's the mystery and the magic of language. And you can do exactly the opposite in terms of motion picture, which is it can be a very long sequence described in Corey Logan that's a hair-raising moment when you see it dramatized. And it's very economical and it's fast, almost like the ice pick that Nick wields against the characters in the story.
I was just thinking of that. You know, I think that there are a lot of positives to both forms, and it's also, it's a different kind of rhythm and balance. And I'm trying to think of when one begins a TV drama, what is the commitment generally of the, like HBO, is it how many hours?
Well, it depends on the buyer and their ardor for the project, of course. Often it can be something like In Treatment, which is an HBO show that came from another country.
It's an Israeli.
Yes, as was Homeland, which is on Showtime. Mm-hmm. You take The Killing, which came from AMC, from Scandinavia. Probably each of those was something like 6. On the other hand, David Simon's show, The Wire.
I was just going to ask about that.
Had an 80-plus page treatment submitted to HBO, 80 pages of treatment, which is descriptive material about the show, the character.
And it went on to be, what, 5 seasons?
Forever and ever, and superlative every episode.
So
because David
Simon
knew that world so well from his years as a reporter.
But so clearly, the was it renewed every year? Was it at some point, did they make a longer
commitment? Well, sometimes they'll make a pilot. They'll make a pilot, and then they'll make an order from that single episode. It can be 6, it can be 13, it can be a full season. They can renew something for 2 more years after that, or 3, or whatever is their pleasure, actually. They tend to make sure they have contracts with the actors, which will be absorbed by any decision they make later. They don't want to make something successful and then realize they can't maintain an actor's availability in the show. So those contracts are written differently.
So that, in essence, I mean, I know what it, if we were to do this as a feature film, it would be this book, and we would make decisions. I mean, there would be tertiary things that we would have to cut out just because we don't have time, but it would be, in essence, this book. If we were to do it as...
But something lovely about
TV
this book?
TV drama. Let me
okay.
just... Tell me if I have this right. If we
okay.
were doing it as TV drama, we would be doing these characters as opposed to this story. I mean, this story would be maybe the first
well,
season.
Well, not necessarily, because if you look at The Good Wife, this is a woman who is learns of a husband's betrayal. The choices she makes about her marriage and her children and her professional life all are factors in the show, but all part of that story, that personal crisis in her life. You wouldn't do it in one episode, obviously, but that's an ongoing story. In television, that's called a closed story or an open story, meaning everything isn't resolved. in 53 minutes of drama the first week or any other week. But the thing that I wanted to say that's very important about Inside Passage is that when you get to the end of the book, it's really the beginning of the Corey and Abe love story. Really,
and that's a good point. And that's the next book. And in the next book, we begin with them as a couple, and they're married. And
which is a world away from where they were when we met them.
Of course. And there is a focus on Billy, who is now their son, not just Corey's son. And, you know, that then becomes what I guess you would call an open story, because we can do whatever we want with them.
Well, precisely. And he's then 17 and mobile and can have adventures of his own.
Well, this is intriguing.
However dark they become.
Yeah, well, that certainly leads to the third in the trilogy, which is called Minos, which is very much about Billy's world and the world of young people. Marianne,
have you found that story yet?
Yes, I have.
Oh,
and it's got a,
well, I'm waiting with bated breath.
lots of good work to be done. It's been great and fascinating talking with you about this, and I look forward to working with you and bringing this to the screen in one form or another.
Well, I'm very excited myself.
Okay. Great. Let's wrap this up. Very good talking to you.
Thank you.